The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Hey, everybody. How we doing? Just living the dream. I like it. You sound great. You always sound great. Hey, my name's Kyle, by the way. I'm one of the pastors here. And so thankful that you're with us this morning. Excited to be able to continue to celebrate the Lord's faithfulness as we open the Word. And we're going to be in 1 Timothy chapter 5 this morning. If you want to go ahead and turn there, you can do so. This is this morning is what we like to call a good old-fashioned hymn sing, right? Lots of songs that maybe you grew up with or are familiar. Like I grew up with a lot of those as well. And I'll just say this. Just because they've been around for a while doesn't mean they're not powerful and beautiful. And I'm really grateful that the team chose to sing those songs, and we're going to continue to do that, and just really, really sweet stuff. A couple of things that I want to touch on. We're going to pray in just a moment, and then we're going to get into 1 Timothy, but Josh mentioned already the ladies' worship night that happened on Friday. My wife was there, Bethany, and let me just say, like, it was a it was a beautiful evening, powerful evening. And I just want to take a moment to acknowledge the fact that the Lord's been really kind to us in a lot of ways here in Spartanburg. One of the ways he's been really kind to us is by blessing us with some immensely talented people, in particular, some immensely talented ladies. And they, Spartanburg was well represented on the stage as they led in worship on Friday night. So Glenda helped participate and helped put the whole thing together. Abby helped lead in worship, who was up here. And then Kaylin also helped lead, really, I think, led through the night. And just by all accounts did a wonderful job. And so thank you, ladies, for being willing to just say yes to what the Lord has for you, ways he's gifted you. And I believe it wholeheartedly, it's blessed a great number of folks. And fellas, look for an email from me this week. So this is a good reminder. If you're not currently signed up to receive emails, I will be sending an email this week with details about the men's event, the address, where to park, all that kind of stuff that we don't want to talk about on a Sunday morning. You're going to get an email from me. And so if you're not signed up for those emails, or if you're not sure if you're signed up for those emails that I send out every Saturday to just kind of update folks and whatnot, follow the QR code or fill out a guest card, and we'll make sure that you're registered and that you get that information, because we would love to have you be a part of that. I think that's it. Oh, after the service today, one more thing. After the service today, if you're new to Summit and you're wondering, well, who are these folks, right? Who is this church? And maybe you've heard some things about us, or good, bad, or otherwise. Maybe you haven't heard anything. You just want to know who we are and why we do the things that we do. And learn a little bit more about what it means to be connected to the life and ministry of this place. We're going to take about 30 minutes. It will be brief, I promise. Down in one of the classrooms, down by the offices. And just talk a little bit about our story as a church. And about who we are, what we believe, why we do the things that we do. And so it's called Summit Connect. If you're interested, stick around for about 30 minutes. We'll have you out of here in plenty of time to eat lunch. But would love for you to do so. No need to register or anything. Just head down there and we'll talk for a little bit. All right, I'm going to pray for us. And we're going to jump into 1 Timothy chapter 5. Father, I thank you for these people, for this family, these men and women who love you and love one another faithfully. And God, I pray that if, there are people in this room who are looking for a church home, would they find in Summit a place that embraces them with joy, with thoughtfulness, with a gospel-motivated love? If there are folks in this room who are here and they don't know much about you, or they maybe have decided in the past, like, I don't think that Christianity thing's for me, I don't think Jesus is for me, Spirit of God, we entrust to you the task of doing what only you can do, and reminding those folks that you love them, that you are faithful, that you are good, and that their hope is found in you, Jesus. Would we be faithful today to listen well to your Spirit as we study your word as your people? We love you and we need you. And it's in your good name that we pray. Amen. Well, you ever hear the phrase, when somebody tells you who they are, you should listen to them? You ever hear that phrase? When somebody tells you who they are, you should listen to them. The idea is that with people, right, we are really good at kind of putting up a front and maybe giving a less than accurate picture of ourselves, but eventually, people will, over the course of time, in what they say and how they interact with others, reveal who they really are. Jesus himself, right, said, it's out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks. And so when folks tell us who they are, we should listen to them. And if that's true for people who are prone to put up a front and be dishonest and kind of present this cultivated image of themselves, it is surely true of God, who does none of those things. When he tells us who he is, we should listen. And so for just a moment, before we get into our passage today in 1 Timothy chapter 5, I want us to listen as the testimony of Scripture tells us, in just a few passages, who God is. And who he is has everything to do with our passage today. So take a trip with me for just a moment. I made reference to this last week, but in Genesis chapter 21, after Hagar is essentially abandoned by Abraham and Sarah, after Sarah gives birth to Isaac, Hagar's in the wilderness with her son Ishmael, convinced that they're about to die because they have no protection and no care and no provision and no way to survive. And the God who she has already named the God who sees, hears her cry and the cries of her boy, and he responds in this way. In Genesis 21, verses 17 and 18, "And God heard the cry of the boy, and the angel of the Lord called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, 'What troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Up, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him into a great nation.'" That's who our God is. He's one who sees and knows and rescues those in despair. A bit later on in the Old Testament, in Psalm 146, as the psalmist is singing praises to the Lord and inviting others to do the same, he roots that invitation for others to do the same in this truth in Psalm 146, verses 5 through 9. He says, "Blessed is he whose help is the God of Jacob, whose hope is the Lord his God, who made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, who keeps faith forever, who executes justice for the oppressed, who gives food to the hungry. The Lord sets the prisoners free. The Lord opens the eyes of the blind. The Lord lifts up those who are bowed down. The Lord loves the righteous. The Lord," listen, "watches over the sojourners. He upholds the widow and the fatherless, but the way of the wicked he brings to ruin." This is who our God is. The Almighty Creator who hears the cries of the broken and provides for those in their great need. A bit later still, in the opening lines of the Lord's words to the people of Israel, through the prophet Isaiah, pleading with the people to pursue faithfulness to Yahweh, in chapter 1 of Isaiah, we hear this in verse 14. "Your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hates. They've become a burden to me. I'm weary of bearing them. When you spread out your hands, I will hide my eyes from you. Even though you make many prayers, I will not listen. Your hands are full of blood." But listen to this exhortation. "Wash yourselves. Make yourselves clean. Remove the evil of your deeds from before my eyes. Cease to do evil." And then in verse 17, "Learn to do good. Seek justice. Correct oppression. Bring justice to the fatherless. Plead the widow's cause." God desires that his people, he defines faithfulness amongst his people as not just right worship, but as bearing his heart in caring for the broken and needy. And yet later still, as Jesus, who is God in flesh, proclaims the message of the kingdom and ministers among the people, we see this often missed, at least by me, interaction, just like this in Luke chapter 7, beginning in verse 11. It says, soon afterward, he, Jesus, went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a great crowd went with him. As he drew near to the gate of the town, behold, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a considerable crowd from the town was with her. And when the Lord saw her, notice his response, he had compassion on her and said to her, do not weep. Then he came up and touched the bier, and the bearers stood still, and he said, young man, I say to you, arise. And the dead man sat up and began to speak, and Jesus gave him to his mother. When God tells us who he is, we should listen. Do you hear it in those passages? And that's but a sampling, right? God's heart is ever bent toward the destitute, ever aware of the needs of the needy, ever concerned, yes, with all of his children, but distinctly so with those who cannot care for themselves. And so it should come as no surprise that as the Spirit of God through Paul is communicating to Timothy about the way that, hey, Timothy, here's what a faith family is supposed to look like. Here's what it means to be a faithful and a healthy church. Here's what it means to thrive and be ordered. And here's what worship is to look like and all of those things. It makes sense that in all of that, the Lord would also be concerned with those same people inside the church. And that's exactly what we see as we turn our attention to 1 Timothy 5 today. And so here's our big idea as we prepare to read that. We've got notes for those of you who want them. They're right there on the ledge here. There's no shame. You go grab those if you need to. We've got them on the table out there in the atrium. You can grab those as well. So you don't have to write some of these things down. I've got them for you there. I've got all those passages on those notes as well. But here's the big idea. God's people reveal God's heart as they honor and care for the widowed. God's people reveal God's heart as they honor and care for the widowed. Look with me at 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 1 through 16. And I'm reading out of the ESV. We got Bibles right in front of you. If you don't have a Bible, that's yours. Take it home with you. We want you to have that. Beginning in verse 1, it says this, do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father. Younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, in all purity. Honor widows who are truly widows. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. She who is truly a widow, left all alone, has set her hope on God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. Command these things as well, so that they may be without reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Let a widow be enrolled if she is not less than 60 years of age, having been the wife of one husband and having a reputation for good works. If she's brought up children, has shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints, has cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work. But refuse to enroll younger widows, for when their passions draw them away from Christ, they desire to marry and so incur condemnation for having abandoned their former faith. Besides that, they learn to be idlers, going about from house to house, and not only idlers, but also gossips and busybodies, saying what they should not. So I would have younger widows marry, bear children, manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander, for some have already strayed after Satan. If any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened so that it may care for those who are truly widows. We'll stop there. My guess is you got some questions. It's fair. Those are fair questions. We're going to do our best to get through those questions and address what Paul says here faithfully in a succinct manner. This is, we've said this a couple of times as we've looked at 1 Timothy, right? This is a letter from the Apostle Paul to his spiritual son, his protege, Timothy, who's serving the church in Ephesus. And this is one of those moments. And we've seen it several times throughout the church, this letter, that even though Paul is writing to Timothy, he's really writing to the entire church here. Because even though we've read things throughout this letter about the church, right? How it's to be ordered and specific roles within the church and warnings against false teaching. This is a reminder for the entire church. Something that is so obvious, so painfully obvious, but is so easy to forget, that the church is filled with people. People who have stories. People who live diverse lives in diverse places and who individually, the ins and outs of their lives are of primary concern to the Lord. And so Timothy, leaders in Ephesus, people in Ephesus, people here of Summit Spartanburg, they should be of primary concern to you as well. So here's how this passage is structured. The first two verses kind of set the table for what the rest of the passage is going to say, what the rest of this chapter plus is going to say. They offer a general statement on how Timothy and others are to treat everybody in the church. And then in verses 3 through 16, we have this really extended kind of unpacking of what care for widows looks like within the church. But we began where we did this morning, and I hope you can see it. Because we have to understand that at the heart of all of this isn't ultimately Paul's concern with a neat and tidy and ordered church. It's not ultimately Paul's concern with things, you know, every T crossed and I dotted and everything perfectly in place. At the heart of all of this is Paul's understanding of the Lord's profound and personal concern, especially for those in his family who bear the greatest need. So let's take just a moment and look at those two verses first, 1 and 2, and then we'll consider together the rest of it and how Paul talks about churches, the church's care for widows. So verses 1 and 2 again say this: do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father. Younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters in all purity. So let's stop there for just a moment. He uses four categories, right? Older men, younger women. And it's really just a way for Paul to make sure he covers everybody in the congregation, right? It's not like Timothy, there are going to be some people in the congregation who are older than you, some who are younger than you. Care well for all of them is what he's saying. Speaks of older men, younger men, older women, younger women. I think Paul takes the time to say what he does here, because Paul wants to make sure that Timothy understands that leading in the church isn't just about getting theology right. It isn't just about structuring a worship service in a particular way or making sure that everybody thinks that he's wise and godly. It's not just about getting the structure of a church organization just right. That stuff matters, but it matters because the church is made up of people who matter to the Lord. They are his sons and daughters. They're your family too, Timothy, is what Paul says here. So treat them as such. They aren't just problems to be solved. They aren't just tasks on a checklist. Treat older men the way you would a father, older women the way that you would a mother, younger men the way you would as a younger brother, and younger women as you would sisters in all purity. So it's just a framework. by which Paul reminds Timothy, reminds us down through the ages, the church is made up of people and people matter. So let's move into, because we got a lot to cover and not a lot of time, the bulk of what Paul says about this first group that he mentions. He's going to talk about widows, he's going to talk about elders, and he's going to talk about slaves. The first group that he mentions that we're going to talk about today are widows. Now, there are some questions that I know that we're going to have to answer, because he says some stuff in here that's a little confusing. But I want to begin where Paul begins, and I want you to notice the very first word in verse 3. Honor. It's a command. Honor. It's going to pop up as Paul speaks to Timothy about these other groups as well, but honor sits at the heart of the way that Paul encourages us to think about relationships within the church. What does it mean? And why is it that Paul puts it front and center here? Well, I have read a bunch of definitions. Read a bunch of theologians say what they think that honor means. And so I'm going to cobble together for you a bit of a summary of what I've read, and hopefully this makes sense to you. If not, you blame me. You don't blame them, right? I put this out there. But to honor is this, and this definition's on the notes as well. To honor is to show proper respect through tangible care. To honor is to show proper respect through tangible care. It's not just talking about, Paul's not just talking about the way that you treat somebody. He's getting after the heart motivation. The way that we think. What motivates the actions that we do take. So here he says, honor widows. We don't have to guess at God's heart toward widows. We've already seen that as we traced through the scriptures earlier. So to honor is to demonstrate our expressed understanding of God's heart for the widows in our midst. It's us living out God's love for them in real time. Now you may be wondering, fairly, why does Paul single out widows? Like, it seems like a strange group maybe for him to focus on so intently and in such a lengthy way as he does here. And I think the simple answer is this. The church in Ephesus presented a particular problem when it came to caring for this particularly needy group. So the situation in Ephesus demanded Paul's response. Like, we've already seen, widows are going to show up throughout the scriptures as of being of a primary concern to the Lord. In fact, it's a lack of care for widows that serves as the impetus for the creation of the role of deacons in Acts chapter 6. So this isn't a unique challenge to the Ephesians, but it was clearly one that Paul felt he needed to address. So I want you to hear me. Some of what Paul says is very specific to the Ephesian context. Because of that, that has to shape the way that we think about this passage. For instance, Paul is writing in a time when widowed women were exponentially more vulnerable in society than widowed men. Exponentially more so. Socially, at the time, women did not have careers most of the time to fall back on or retirement funds to pull from. They didn't have lands that they had inherited from their families. They often, as Paul's going to make mention of, took care of the home. And while that was vitally important, it did not, in and of itself, provide money that would be missing when a husband passes away. So you can imagine how widows are this uniquely vulnerable group. Additionally, while Paul is speaking to widowed women here because of the situation in Ephesus, many of the principles that he offers for caring for them could very much be applied to widowed men in our day as well. And should be, I think. So keep that in mind as we try to answer two questions in walking through this passage. How does Paul define widow? Number one. And number two, how should the church faithfully honor and care for them? How does Paul define widow? And then really, why does he define it the way that he does? And then how should the church faithfully honor and care for them? Several times throughout this passage, and some of this, just full confession, we've got to unpack some things here, so it might feel a little bit like a class. We're going to get to practical stuff in just a moment, so hang with me, but we've got to do some business with some of the language that Paul uses here. He uses the phrase, truly widows, a couple of times. Bless you. In verse 3, Paul tells Timothy and the Ephesians to honor those who are truly widows. And that sounds kind of odd, right? I mean, why would you distinguish between any of the ladies in the Ephesian church who had lost husbands, whether they were 25 or 75? If you look back through the Old Testament, or if you listen to Jesus, or if you go read the book of James, Jesus' half-brother, all of whom which mention widows, they don't have age qualifications, age minimums. So why here? As we read through this passage, I think it becomes increasingly clear that Paul is using the phrase truly widows to refer to a specific category of care within the church. So Paul's writing to Timothy and he's saying, man, as you structure a faithful church, and it sounds almost like he's kind of talking like this is a business discussion, right? Sounds a little cold and calculated. But he's saying there are limited resources within any church, and Paul wants to help Timothy and the rest of the Ephesians prioritize rightly those who receive financial care, focusing on those who really need it. So Paul gives some qualifications. So that's what he means when he says that those who are truly widows. He's not saying that there's not reason to grieve and not real like sense of loss for those who have lost husbands, no matter how old they are. He's speaking in terms of category of care for the administration of the Ephesian church. So what are some of those qualifiers? Now he says first that if a woman has lost her husband but has children or grandchildren, that they should learn to show godliness to their own household, in verse 4, in caring for the widow. He's saying to the family, essentially, you put your faith in Jesus into practice by embracing the responsibility to care for this vulnerable woman who has, in all likelihood, spent years sacrificially caring for you. And this is serious. Listen to the way that Paul speaks of the family, to the family of widows in verse 8. He says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. He's not mincing words. This is Paul speaking to believers and saying, listen, if it's in your power to do so and you refuse to care well for your family, that's anything other than showing the love of Jesus. Even unbelievers will care for their family in this way. How dare you think that you don't have to do so? And it would be really easy for us to skate past this quickly because it's not the primary point of the passage, right? He's writing to the church. And this is a little bit of a rabbit trail here, talking to families, but it's worth considering and asking of ourselves, are we faithfully exercising our responsibility to care for the widows or to care for the vulnerable in general within our own families? If I could tell you just a quick story. Bethany had a nana, and I did not know her well. Her name was Josephine, so that's who Isla's named after, because it's Isla Joe. But her dad's mom, by the time I met her, her grandmother was unwell. She had dementia and was in a care facility beyond her parents' capacity to care for her within their own home. She was a widow. She was in this little care facility in their hometown in Virginia. And I'll tell you, in the brief time that I was a part of this family while she was living, I watched my father-in-law day after day after day after day. A man who was a farmer, who's strong and intimidating and fixes stuff and always has like dirt and junk on his clothes, but in a really cool way. He's probably just like roped a calf or something. Not like me, I fell and I got dirt on me. He's like actually been doing stuff. But every day that man would drive to the care facility just to be there with his mama. Bethany, I told her ahead of time, I gave her like 30 seconds of heads up. I was like, I'm going to talk about your dad today. And she goes, oh, okay. But she said, I told her what I was going to share generally. And she started talking about all the things that he did before I came into the family when she was still living at home. Things like, man, in the wintertime, just constantly making sure she had firewood and taking care of her in an inordinate number of ways. But when I knew him, he would drive there and in his just manure and dirt stained clothes, sit with his mother and give her, as her mind was failing, a piece of the familiar to hold on to. And that stuck with me for 12 years because I think it's a really beautiful picture of what Paul's talking about here. It may be inconvenient and it will surely be sacrificial. Before we talk about the church's responsibility toward the vulnerable, the widow, the widower, we should begin where Paul begins, within families. Are we faithful in that? Not only does Paul offer a qualifier in terms of care, when it comes to those who have families who can and should take care of them, but he also offers an age limit, right? I mentioned it earlier. He says that only those over 60 should be enrolled in verse 9, which again lets us know he's thinking in terms of categories of care officially within the church, because you can absolutely be a widow and be younger than 60. So why put an age limit on it? Well, Paul's going to encourage younger widows to remarry. He says in verse 11 that younger widows may well desire to remarry and that they should remarry if they do. He speaks there about the passions of younger widows drawing them away from Christ. And that sounds funny to our ears because it's like, well, what do you mean? Like maybe they were a widow for a time and they just decided that they wanted to get married. Isn't that okay? And I think he's speaking again about something that is specific to the Ephesian context, where the younger widows were offering some sort of pledge, an official commitment to the Lord to dedicate themselves exclusively to the Lord, maybe to not be married, but their desire to remarry was causing them to renege on that pledge. So Paul's speaking into an Ephesian-specific situation here and telling the younger widows, hey, rather than make a promise that you may not be able to keep, don't make that promise at all and pursue remarriage if that's what you desire. So this is not unloving on Paul's behalf. This is pastoral. I care about you and your relationship with the Lord. And I don't want you to make a promise to the Lord that he takes seriously and then have you become unfaithful to that. And then the final qualifier that Paul offers is in reference to the character of these widows. He says in verses 5 and 6, she who is truly a widow, left all alone, has set her hope on God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. He goes on to say this in verses 9 and 10. Let a widow be enrolled if she's not less than 60 years of age, having been the wife of one husband, faithful essentially, and having a reputation for good works. If she's brought up children, has shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints, has cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work. And then he warns a bit later against those widows who have made it a practice to, in his words, go from house to house as gossips and busybodies. In short, a widow who's enrolled here officially is to demonstrate faithfulness to Jesus and faithfulness to the church in the wake of her life. I know that's a lot. Here's how Robert Yarbrough, a commentator, summarizes the qualifications here for those who are to be considered truly widows in this official capacity. Those who are bereft of family who could help, exemplary in setting their hope on God, and vigilant and continued prayerfulness. And I would add the age qualification that Paul just says explicitly there. This is how Paul defines widows who should be the primary focus of the church's care in Ephesus, the tangible care in Ephesus. And again, he's speaking in business-like categories that might sound cold, but I don't believe that's at the heart of what's going on here, because he wants the church both to faithfully care for the people in its midst and faithfully steward the resources that they've been given. But I don't think that the primary application for us is creating a program for all of the widows who are over 60 and older. Right? In that sense, Paul is speaking to a particular situation in Ephesus that demanded that kind of specificity. But for us, I think a broader principle in play as we answer the second question I mentioned earlier: how should the church faithfully honor and care for the widowed? And I said it that way on purpose because that includes widows and widowers. How should the church faithfully honor, reflect God's heart and concern to the widowed? Don't just think in terms of those over 60, although I do think there's something to be said for paying specific attention to those who are older. And as we answer that question, I want us all to consider it. It's not just for us as a collective body, but as individuals as well. How has the Lord uniquely positioned you to care well for the widowed in our midst? Because this is an opportunity for us to reflect the heart of God as God's people to those who clearly have God's affection and attention. So if you remember from earlier, here's how we defined honor, right? From verse 3. To show honor is to demonstrate proper respect through tangible care. But honor and care cannot just be about throwing money at those who might need some financial help. That might be important for sure. But I'd like to offer this idea that honor should be care on their terms and not ours. It's loving them as they want and need to be loved, not simply as we want to love them or in ways that are convenient for us. I don't know if you've heard of a guy named Henri Nouwen. He was a Catholic priest who, if you read his books, you're going to find stuff to quibble with, for sure. Disagree with some things, but he also offers lots that's thoughtful and wise. And he wrote this little book called Aging. And in it, he's reflecting on what it means as a priest to care well for those who are elderly, and in particular, those who are single. And he's reflecting on that in his own life too, right? As a priest who's unmarried, who's getting older, wrestling with what does it mean to be single as I get older. And here is how he speaks about that kind of care and how I think we should think about honor. He says, as long as we think that caring means only being nice and friendly to old people, paying them a visit, bringing them a flower or offering them a ride, we are apt to forget how much more important it is for us to be willing and able to be present to those we care for. Like all those things he mentioned are good things that may well represent honor and care for the widowed, but they may not. Some might need financial help and rides. Some might need someone to just come and sit and listen to them as they tell the same stories over and over and over again. Honor puts care on their terms, not ours. Maybe you're like me, and as I was wrestling with this passage, as we were as a staff, you're wondering, man, what does this look like for us? And you know what would be run counter to everything we've just said is if I, a 36-year-old married dude, and the rest of our staff team, to come up with a list of care and honor on our terms. And so what we did is we reached out and asked some widowed folks in our midst and beyond, what does honor and care look like? Help us think well about that. What does it mean to you? I just want to give you some ideas as they responded to us. I'm just kind of a bulleted list here. Invite someone who's widowed out for a meal on the weekend or to a family's house for dinner or lunch. Invite them over for a Sunday lunch. What is typically just this like sweet family friends reserved time. Include them in something that you are already doing. The normal activities of life. Ask them to come watch your kids play ball, or perform in shows, or go to concerts. Invite them out for a Saturday outing to the mountains, or a hike, or a craft fair, or apple picking, or a concert you might go to, or something you're already planning to do, and that you could invite them to do along with you. Invite a lady to go shopping with you to the mall or at a local craft fair. Although, maybe there's some guys that would want to go to a mall or a craft fair. I don't know. I'm not trying to be judgy about that. Show up at her house without being asked to pull weeds, trim shrubs, change light bulbs. Whatever honeydew things, her honey is not around to do anymore. Be willing to talk about their deceased spouse. Sit with them in church or invite them to sit with you. Sometimes a widow has a special place that she and her husband sat, or widower, right? He and his wife sat at and might not want to move away from that spot. Invite them to a movie. Do anything that becomes a regular thing, something that is routine and that they can count on. Or maybe just call to check in and be a friend and listen to them without them having to be the one to reach out and initiate. I want to invite the band to come back up at this time as we prepare to close. I offer that list as a way not to overwhelm us with all of the things we should be doing, but to demonstrate for us that there are things in there that we can all do. I know, as your pastor, hear me, sitting in 1 Timothy, and in particular, sitting in this passage, it has challenged me to be more attentive to the needs of widows and widowers in our midst. Forced me to acknowledge the ways that I've not done a good job of that. I think that's the heart of this passage for us. Are we willing to be attentive to a group of people whose needs are often easy to overlook in the everydayness of life, but are never, ever, ever overlooked by the Lord? Are we willing to honor these men and women by simply asking, what does care for them on their terms look like? And how can I meet that need? This is who our God is. And we reveal God's heart as we honor and care for the widowed. One more time. Hear these words from the Lord through Isaiah. Learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression, bring justice to the fatherless, plead the widow's cause. Father, would you help us to be faithful? To reflect your heart in the way that we care for those who you've entrusted to us, given to us, who have given so much over the years to care well for us. God, in this moment, I'm not saying that your Spirit cannot offer a word of challenge here, but God, sometimes guilt and shame can be crippling and cause us to turn off an attentiveness to your Spirit. And so, Lord, I pray against that. Would we hear in this an invitation and an opportunity, an exhortation to say, we're not talking about what hasn't been done. Let's talk about how we can grow and what you're inviting us into now. You've had to bring me there. So would we be faithful to listen to you? To love as you love, to care as you care, to honor. Jesus, we need your help. We love you. And it's in your good name that we ask this. Amen.
Thank you for joining for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child the repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.